It's 8:04 on listener-supported KGNU. This is the Morning Magazine for Thursday, January 30th of 2025. Hey there, I'm Jackie Sedley. Coming up on today's program, ahead of local screenings of a documentary on Rocky Flats, officials discovered a 55-gallon drum in Walnut Creek that could hold extremely dangerous radioactive waste. You'll hear about the drum as well as the film this morning. Then it's Radio Nibbles, our weekly segment with John Lindorf. Coming up on today's A Public Affair, are people drinking less? As we come to the end of Dry January, John Lindorf and I will spend the hour talking about the sobering of Boulder. Some breweries are seeing a decline in customers. Are people more sober curious these days? And if so, why? That and more on this morning's A Public Affair at 8:32. We'll be taking your calls. At 9:30, it's the Morning Sound Alternative. That's all coming up, but first, headlines with KGNU's Steve Miller.
U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, agents have allegedly called off their planned raid in Aurora, for now. Earlier this week, three sources close to ICE told NBC News that federal enforcement agencies are targeting three U.S. cities per week for large-scale immigration arrests. This was set to include Aurora as early as today. But yesterday, two sources familiar with the planning told NBC that the Aurora operation was called off temporarily due to media leaks. One source said the leaks posed operational security risk for officers. Over the past few days, ICE has made arrests in Chicago and New York City, joined by U.S. Marshals, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, the Drug Enforcement Administration, DEA, and the FBI, among others. Colorado's Woodland Park School District Board passed a resolution last night recognizing only two sexes. This decision to pass the recognizing only two sexes and rejecting gender ideology measure comes as Donald Trump continues to roll back protection for transgender and gender nonconforming people in the first 2 weeks of his second administration. The Denver Post called the over an hour-long meeting contentious, with some board members wholeheartedly supporting the measure and others expressing frustration at the focus on nonsense issues. Woodland Park has not had any instances of students using bathrooms or locker rooms that are different from their biological gender and do not currently have any all-gender restrooms. Woodland Park is a small district in Teller County, northwest of Colorado Springs, with just under 2,000 students. The district garnered widespread attention in recent years after it hired a new superintendent and adopted a social studies standard that was created by a right-wing advocacy group. The Trump administration is making its stance on transgender and gender nonconforming rights clear. Earlier this week, the U.S. Department of Education's Office for Civil Rights began investigating Denver Public Schools for discriminating against its female students by replacing a girls' restroom with a new gender-neutral bathroom at East High School. Despite the current federally enforced ideology, sex and gender identity are two very distinct concepts. While sex refers to the biological sex one was assigned at birth, gender identity refers to a person's internal sense of gender, which can be the same as or different from one's assigned sex. Gender is a wide-ranging spectrum, not a binary. Gender-inclusive bathrooms often seek to provide a comfortable environment for people of all identities and are not meant to be an exclusionary practice by any means. The Denver Post called the over an hour-long meeting contentious, with some board members wholeheartedly supporting the measure and others expressing frustration at the focus on nonsense issues.
That was Steve Miller with KGNU's headlines. Looking at the weather today, look for mainly sunny skies. In Boulder, the high will be 44 degrees. In Denver, there's a chance for snow starting early this morning and tapering off around 1 p.m. The expected high is 44 degrees in Denver. In Fort Collins, the expected high 46 degrees. And in Nederland today, the high will reach 36 degrees. It's 8:09 on listener-supported KGNU. This is The Morning Magazine. I'm Jackie Sedley. Officials discovered a 55-gallon drum in the Walnut Creek drainage at Rocky Flats. This drum, if sourced from the former nuclear weapons plant, has the potential to contain extremely dangerous radioactive waste. Environmental activists, especially those connected to Rocky Flats, see discoveries like these as clear signs that the Superfund site still poses a massive risk to public safety. The discovery hasn't made headlines, at least not yet. Based on internal documents, email documents, posted to Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment's website, officials at the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment, or CDPHE, and the U.S. Department of Energy spoke about the drum on November 21st. Of 2024. This news was brought to my attention by John Lipsky, the former FBI agent that led the search and eventual closure of Rocky Flats in the late 80s. Initially, we sat down to discuss filmmaker Jeff Gipe's new documentary, Half-Life of Memory, America's Forgotten Atomic Bomb Factory. You've heard me talk to Gipe on the mag about the film before, back in October, when he was first screening it to the public. This time, just yesterday, I sat down with Gipe and Lipsky to have what I thought was going to be a straightforward conversation about the documentary. The first portion of this interview you're about to hear does focus on Gipe's work and Lipsky's history with Rocky Flats, but stay tuned to the end to hear the shocking news about the discovered drum.
It was a couple of years of prepping to serve the search warrant, and there were obstacles, obviously, there always are, but these kind of obstacles were different. I would be dealing with the most toxic substance known, plutonium-239. It's a killer, and it deranges our DNA, and we can have bad offspring. Exposure was concerning to me, but also prepping for evidence at Rocky Flats. One of the key things I had to do was identify where I was going to search. And the other key thing is, what's the evidence I want? And I thought it would be a good idea to fly over Rocky Flats. And in those days, it really was videotape, infrared. And it helped me to, I guess, actually witness what it looked like, the 6,500 acres flying over it, and what was going on in the middle of the night. But what I wasn't prepared for was the politics. It was a transformative process from the Reagan years and the felonious EPA that was well known. And then it was George Herbert Walker Bush that had just come into office. So that was part of the delay. And Bush wanted his candidate for the Energy Department to be confirmed before I was to proceed. And fortunately, he chose Admiral James Watkins, Navy Admiral. And the Department of Justice and Bob Mueller, who later became the FBI director, were resistant against doing a search warrant. But Admiral Watkins was a quick study, and he knew that, as he said, there was a real mess at Rocky Flats. And I think he put them on the chopping block. Okay, let's see what a real mess looks like. But then when we started the search, the Tiger teams or the auditing teams had already arrived for a week. And so there was always moving parts. We had sealed the affidavit. So normally a search warrant is sealed until the return is lodged with the court, and then media and public can go and look at it. But we took the extra step of getting a court order seal. And the attorney general at the time was Dick Thornburg. And he ordered that it be unsealed and provided to the public, like by the 8th of June. So in 2 days, the whole world knew what our roadmap looked like. It was totally unsafe of him to do that. It never felt like a regular case at all. I knew it was a big case, but it turned in and morphed into a difficult case.
I remember the first time that I talked to Jeff, there was a lot of conversation about how those that worked there, like his dad, signed contracts and had a lot of fear around saying anything about what was happening at Rocky Flats. As an FBI agent, I know that a lot of secrecy is part of the name of the game. At the time, did you have any fear about your career, about your reputation intervening in a space like that with the pushback that you received and with the status of the administration at the time?
I had concerns, of course. I think taking on a case like this, a big employer of Colorado, and we couldn't even go to the U.S. Attorney in 1987 because he was so entrenched in the GOP that the prosecutor I worked with said, no, I'm not going to go to him because he'll decline it. So the political aspect of it was concerning.
Jeff, to bring you into the conversation, I know that as a storyteller, it can be complicated to figure out which questions to ask, which angle to take, especially with such a complex and long period of history with so many details entrenched in it. You're trying to make it concise for the viewer. How did you determine where to start, especially with someone like John?
That was extremely difficult because Rocky Flats history is so vast, and it's really hundreds of stories that are individual stories, so putting it together in one film is very difficult, and the editing process was probably the most difficult. I interviewed 60-plus people for the film, and it was a massive amount of research, and each person that I went to interview was looking into who they were, what they had done, their oral histories. Thankfully, there's a lot of information out there on some of these people, like, you know, John, of course, I knew about from reading books and his oral histories, but it's still complicated. I'm still learning stuff every day about Rocky Flats.
And John, as that wealth of knowledge, flipping the question to you, how did you decide which information to prioritize telling Jeff? Or did you just tell Jeff everything you had and left it to him to decide which parts should make the cut?
Jeff is a very good interviewer, and he's going to be humble about it, so I'm going to toot his horn for him. He asks very good, straightforward questions, and I try to answer those questions. And in my mind, I'm thinking, why is he asking these questions? You know, where are we going with this? And I didn't really try to hold back anything. It wasn't that kind of an interview. But if I may, I really invite Jackie or listeners to go to the Colorado Environmental Film Festival showing of Jeff's really good documentary, and to condense the safety aspect the way that he did with the nuclear worker and other aspects. I think the feeling is there. I know some people cried when I've been at the screenings, and I would invite everybody, because the predominant question is it safe? Dr. Mark Johnson, the former Jefferson County Health Director, towards the end, he answers that question, and I'm not going to do a spoiler alert, but I keep pondering what he said, and it should answer everyone's questions about whether going out there now, like it was before, is it safe?
And I know that John mentioned that film festival, the Environmental Film Festival. What are the upcoming screenings that people can check out?
So on January 31st, there will be a screening at DU in Denver, and that is a free screening. I invite people to attend, and there will also be a lab demonstration that follows that. And on February 2nd, there will be 3 screenings in Boulder. I believe 2 of them are sold out, but there are still tickets for 1 of them. The screenings on February 2nd will be the first screenings in Boulder. And this community was really entrenched in Rocky Flats from the 70s all the way up until the raid. And even now, a lot of people are still very interested. Unfortunately, it's an issue that a lot of younger people don't know about or not aware about. So I'm hoping that we can get them to show up or to see the film somehow. And then on February 23rd, there'll be a large screening at the Colorado School of Mines for the Colorado Environmental Film Festival. And I'm sure there will be more soon. But for people that can't make that, it's also available online now on Apple TV, on Google Play, on YouTube. And you could search the film and find it.
Is there anything else that either of you wanted to add?
Yeah, I do. Breaking news. Okay. So yesterday I was looking for something on the CDPHE website for public access. And this is for you. That's all I've got. There's no explanation. But the Department of Energy found a 55-gallon drum in the Walnut Creek drainage. No location, no specifics. And that was in November. And Andrew Keim from U.S. Department of Energy wrote an email to memorializing a conversation about how they are to proceed with the drum or drums that could be out there. And I think it just adds to the fact that the cleanup was not entirely good. And it goes much more than that, Jackie and the listeners, is that in 1970, Dow Chemical employee told a joint atomic energy congressman that they didn't know where all the drums were buried at Rocky Flats, flat out. There's a transcript of it. And in the 1990s, when a lot of the waste had gone to Idaho, the state of New Mexico told Idaho, you're going to have to characterize all the waste drums. Well, Rocky Flats had no documentation for it. So what does that mean? We have second generation people trying to figure out what may or may not have been utilized at Rocky Flats and then start characterizing it, I think, haphazardly. And so there's really a lack of information somewhat in the area of where the buried drums were from the 50s through the 70s. So I think it's an alarm that we've got a real problem. And with all that digging that could occur, because it says that the email says, well, that they're not, DOE is not to dig deeper than 30 inches. That's because there's an agreement in place not to dig deeper than 3 feet. But when they start excavating that drum, throwing up the dust and trained with contaminants, people downwind, when are they going to be told that this is going to occur? It just spirals out of control and more contamination could be spread.
For people that might not know what is inside of this drum, just what is the drum? What does this mean?
We don't know what's in the drum, and we don't know if there is a chain of drums behind the one that's showing up in the drainage, and there's more that's going to have to be. Have no idea, but 55-gallon drums were the norm at Rocky Flats. I'm reasonably certain it's a US DOE drum.
So, what do you do with this information then? You hope that it gets resolved? You intervene? Not just you, but the general public. What are we meant to do when we hear something like this?
I'm doing what I'm hoping a lot of other people will be doing is asking questions. So I have turned it over to the news media organization, including you. I've also informed our colleagues about it so we can talk about how we're going to proceed. I would like to see the news media actually call about this email and set up a tour for the reporter to go see if the drum is still in the ground and we can get video of it. If it's not, pictures and what so far have they done about it and what's the outcome? Is it only one drum or are they going to pitch a tent and start digging up a whole graveyard? I don't know.
You can read that email between CDPHE and DOE officials about the 55-gallon drum found in the Walnut Creek drainage at kgnu.org shortly after the end of the magazine. Also, for more details on the screenings happening tomorrow and next week into late February of Half-Life of Memory, you can head to halflifeofmemory.com.
Thank you.
And transitioning into some potentially lighter news for your Thursday, John Lindorf is in the studio with me for Radio Nibbles and will be joining me for A Public Affair in just a handful of minutes as we discuss the sobering of Boulder. Good morning, John.
Oh, good morning, Jackie. I wanted to start with some national news that's not entirely unrelated. You know, on the one hand, the FDA has officially banned red number 3 dye from all food products. That means your Cheetos are going to start looking different, along with your Twizzlers and a lot of other things. We have to hope that the current administration doesn't revoke that that ban. And in other news, you know Progresso, the soup company?
Yeah.
For reasons that really escape me, they have introduced a limited edition soup drops. Now, you'd like to think that those were like something you dropped in hot water and made soup. But no, it's a hard candy flavored like chicken noodle soup, which I find deeply disturbing.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And finally, you know, Escoffier School of Culinary Arts in Boulder is starting to do some national surveys about food-related things. And they said that they showed that 58% of millennials would be willing to order food from a robot. How about you?
I wouldn't choose it as my first, second, or third preference, but I guess I wouldn't be against it. How about you?
Well, I don't know how different that is from ordering from a kiosk, but seems to take the humanity out of dining.
And you'll never taste love in your food again. What about the love, John?
Exactly. I mean, it's we're isolated enough as it is,
right.
So I'm not. I think maybe it's that millennials are tired of dealing with servers and tips and things, but I don't know if that's going to change the dining paradigm.
Yeah, or the minimum wage jobs that a lot of young people start out with, like I did.
Exactly, yeah. We do have some local news. Gun Barrel doesn't have a huge number of dining places, but they have a new place. It's called Whistling Boar Provisions, 6315 Lookout Road. And it's a caterer, so they make, they're doing scratch-made lunches and breakfasts. They make their own breads, really good. So worthwhile checking out. That's Whistling Boar Provisions. And there's a new Vietnamese restaurant in Lafayette called Saigon District 1, 599 Crossing Road, and looks quite good.
Okay, good to know. What about any events that people can head to in the community?
Well, I want to wish all who celebrate Chinese New Year, Asian New Year, which was, I think, started yesterday. It's the Year of the Snake. And Creature Comforts Cafe downtown, which is a lovely place, is going to host a Year of the Snake 8-course Chinese New Year tasting meal cooked by Devin Kioprofe, who's the chef at Longmont's Rising Tiger. A lot of people have seen him at the Longmont Farmers Market, and you can check with Creature Comforts Cafe about that. I also wanted to mention one of the very coolest that I love when young people, really young people, actually start cooking. Applications are open for the Boulder School District's Middle School Iron Chef Competition. It's for teams of 2 to 4 middle school students and one adult coach. They come up with a global recipe that might be served to students, and they're going to, if they get accepted, March 19th, it's a live cooking competition amongst middle schoolers. Very cool.
Very cool, yeah. All right, moving on. What is in Nibbles this week, John?
Well, I discovered that I have been writing Nibbles for the Boulder Weekly for 9 years now.
No way. Congrats.
Well, thank you. And I originally started writing Nibbles in 1985, back before the world began. And it's been in various publications. So I celebrated my anniversary by writing a column about another anniversary, Cafe Aeon, which is a cool tapas restaurant up on the hill. Been there for 15 years, and it's a revelation about life on the hill and operating a business up there.
Mm. And the best thing you've tasted lately?
I had just a wonderful meal at a new restaurant in Boulder called Lotus Moon Restaurant. It's on Pearl Street near 28th, and they serve vegan Vietnamese food. And I had some pho and spring rolls and vermicelli, and it was just great.
That sounds delicious. I've been craving those kind of noodle dishes lately.
Yeah, this is wonderful, and it's you know, you can feel reasonably healthy about it.
All right, noted. Well, you can listen to Radio Nibbles and Kitchen Table Talk podcasts always at kgnu.org.
And please sign up for a CSA from one of 15 local farms Sunday at Fritz Brewery in Niwot, and get yourself set for vegetables in the summer.
Great, great PSA. Well, that takes us to the end of today's Morning Magazine, but do not go anywhere. On today's A Public Affair, in just a few minutes, John Lindorf and I will stay together in the studio for the hour, talking about sobering in Boulder. As we come to the end of dry January, we know that some breweries see a decline in customers over that month, but are more people sober curious these days? And if so, why? That and more on this morning's A Public Affair. Stay tuned.